And we are fortunate to be joined on the phone right now by Assistant Professor of Wildlife Ecology at Michigan Tech University, John Vucetic. John, I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, and secondly, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah, it's great to be here. It's great to be here.
And did I pronounce your name correctly?
Very good, yes, definitely.
I grew up in an area where those names were kind of common. I shouldn't struggle with it.
All right, great.
At any rate, just as background, and Buck and I were talking a little bit about this on the air earlier, you are, in fact, an assistant professor of wildlife ecology at Michigan Tech, and along with Rolf Peterson, who has been on our show a couple of times, I think, you have been part of the study of the Isle Royale Wolf-Moose Project, which has been going on since 1990, and the study of moose on Isle Royale, also wolves in Michigan's UP and Yellowstone. And first of all, when we've talked to Rolf before, I just always find this just a fascinating study. What's so special about moose on Isle Royale that we need to spend a lot of time studying it?
Yeah, and actually, so my involvement with the project began in about the year 1990. The project itself has been going on for 52 years now, and so that is a long time to hold one's attention. why would they be so interesting for such a long time? You know, I think a couple of things about it. One is Isle Royale, of course, it's an island, and so that means that the wolves and the moose that live there, they're kind of stuck there. They can't walk off the island too easily, and other wolves and moose from, say, Canada, Minnesota can't get there so easily. So that adds a little bit of simplicity to the place, and we need that simplicity just to kind of makes it something easier for us to try to understand. And then also, because it's an island, a few important species have never made it there. And so white-tailed deer have never made it to Isle Royale, and coyotes have not been on Isle Royale ever since wolves arrived. And so if they were all there, they would all interact, and it would all be quite complicated. But this is a single predator, the wolves, and a single prey, the moose, and it's that simplicity that kind of sets the stage for why it's so important.
And over the years, in the years that you've been associated with it, what has been the focus of the research, John? Numbers, population numbers, I would think. But what else have you been focusing on as far as the study goes?
Yeah, the long-term goal has always been the same, and that's been, as you'd mentioned, to kind of understand how and why the wolf and moose populations fluctuate over time. And while that's been like a constant throughout, we've also made a large number of collaborations with other folks to try to understand various aspects of it. Everything from like ecotoxicology associated with maybe the bones of these moose. We've done some work on arthritis, some work on wolf behavior. And so because we're committed to this one place, we try to learn about all aspects of it. But the focus is always population biology. Why do those populations go up and down the way they do?
And what can you tell us about wolf and moose populations on Isle Royale over the last couple of years? Has it held steady? I'm assuming that as the wolf population drops for whatever reason, the moose population rises and vice versa, but maybe that isn't always
true. I mean, that's an important truth, and it often happens. You know, what we've learned in the last 7 or 8 years that have been kind of important is an appreciation for a new player on the stage, and that happens to be a tick species. It's a tick that bothers only the moose.
Oh.
It's active in the wintertime, so this is also not what we usually think of for ticks. But what's important about it is a heavily infested moose can have like 70,000 ticks on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, really, it's remarkable, and then it can cause a fair amount of blood loss. It can cause the moose to lose much of their hair. And the greatest impact of these ticks is always in the late winter, early spring. Now, the ticks have always been there.
They've
been there as long as the moose have been there.
Huh.
Here's one thing is that we haven't been paying close attention to them for much of the time, because for us to pay attention to them, that means somehow quantifying them, counting them, and how in the world you can't count 70,000 ticks on each moose, right?
I don't want to be on that committee, okay?
No, exactly right. And so anyways, what we discovered in about the year 2000 is a way to kind of document this. What we do is we take pictures of the moose, photographs in the springtime, and we can see the hair loss pattern in the photograph, and we can do some digitizing of the photograph and be able to estimate how much hair loss, which is an index of how many ticks. Well, we've been doing that now for about 10 years, and what we've learned in these last 10 years is that there had, well, moose have been declining a great deal, from about 1,000 to about 500 moose over the last 10 years, approximately. And while that had been going on, wolves have been on the increase. You know, I think long ago, 30, 40 years ago, we would have said, oh, well, I guess the wolves are doing better, and that's why the moose are doing poor. But I think what we understand now is the ticks may have been playing a big role in what we've been seeing the last 10 years.
Sure.
Ticks kind of weakening the moose, making it easier for the wolves.
Sure.
And that's really quite a remarkable thing, to think that a creature the size of your pinky fingernail could have such a huge influence on the whole system.
Well, now, and I want to get on to the main reason why I called, and
yeah.
That was the article that was in the New York Times. But so you said that moose have gone from about 1,000 down to about 500.
Yeah.
Over the last several years. It looks like, Freddie, from what you're saying, that trend is continuing. What happened at some point in time? How does that impact the wolf population? Doesn't that, I mean, they're running out of food, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, all this, again, for about the last 10 years or so, moose have been on the decrease. Wolves had been on the increase, but then the bottom fell out for the wolves about a year and a half ago. And so they recently went from about 30 wolves to about 20 wolves. And we'd expect the next time we count them this January, there's a good chance that there'll be even fewer of those wolves. And so so what's happening as far as the moose are concerned is all the things are lining up to be kind of nice for them. The ticks are just, that I mentioned, they're just starting to lighten up. They haven't been so bad the last year or so. The wolves are starting to be not so abundant. The summers haven't been too hot last few years, and so there's a lot of food for the moose. Mainly there's a lot of food because there haven't been so many moose, so the forest has been growing back.
Right.
So things are really lining up for the moose, and so hopefully they'll, for their sake anyways, they'll take advantage of that next couple of years.
So they may stage a late-game rally here.
Exactly.
Now, I want to remind our listeners we're visiting with John Vucetich, who is an assistant professor of wildlife ecology at Michigan Tech University, talking about moose and wolves on Isle Royale, and I guess ticks as well. But this article that recently in the New York Times talked about the fact that you have made, I think, it seems to me, rather surprising, perhaps startling discovery about the moose over there, and that is that they are suffering from arthritis, primarily in the area of the hip. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, that's some work that we've been doing for a little while.
Now, first of all, how do you know this? And I guess at least one of my questions is, how do you study the moose? I mean, I'm assuming that you don't go over there and just wander around and tag them.
Right. Yeah, the way we were able to discover about the arthritis originally goes back to the very early days of the study in the 1960s. And some of the work that we do is in the wintertime. And at that time, we are flying in a small aircraft looking for when it is that wolves kill moose. And when they do, we wait for the wolves to finish feeding.
When they're hungry?
Excuse me?
So you said you look for the times when the wolves kill the moose, and I said, isn't that when they're hungry?
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah, no, that's for sure.
No,
that's exactly right.
I'm being facetious. Please
yeah,
go
no,
on,
no,
John.
No, I follow.
Totally disregard whatever I say.
And so anyways, when the wolves are done feeding, then we land the plane nearby, and then we hike in and perform a necropsy on the moose. And in performing the necropsy, we're largely looking at the bones that have been left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the inspection of these bones, you can find whether a moose has arthritis or not. It's the hip socket for a moose is like that of a person. It's a ball and socket joint. And so the socket, the part that's on the hip, that can become quite dramatically deformed in a severe case of arthritis. And so that's what we're looking at. We've long known that there are a lot of moose that have it, and of course we always kind of wondered why.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to, so that's one thread in the whole story. The other thread has to do with what do we know about arthritis in people? And here's what we know about that. We know that genetics are important, but they don't tell the whole story. And we also know that injury is important for causing arthritis, but we don't know the whole story there either. Basically, what can happen is, as a young or middle-aged person, if you injure a joint, then later on in life that can become a point of arthritis.
Sure.
It doesn't always happen. It happens sometimes. And so we're left with, okay, genetics, injury, that explains some of what is seen in humans and arthritis, but not all of it. Now, there had been this one speculative idea about humans and arthritis, and it had to do with this notion notion that maybe when people are very young, infants really, if they're malnourished or not properly nourished, that later in life they may have a variety of troubles. And there's some suggestion heart disease has a phenomenon like this, and some suggestion that maybe arthritis is like this. But it was just kind of a rough idea. You can see that, you know, if you wanted to conduct an experiment on such a thing, that would be kind of a bad idea. You can't do that to people, malnourish them to see what happens 60 years later. That's
right.
not a good thing.
Hopefully we're past those kinds of experiments.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But for moose just quite naturally, some of them end up being malnourished, and some of them end up doing just fine and being very well nourished. So one of the other things that we do, going back to the necropsies that we perform on these moose, is we always collect a foot bone. It's a metatarsus bone is the technical name, but it's in a human, it would be one of our foot bones. In a mm-hmm. moose, it's about a foot and a half long. It's a very long bone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's known that that bone does all of its growing in the first year of life, and then it stops, which means that the length of that bone is a good indication of how well-nourished the moose is when it's young.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So we're starting to kind of put the pieces together here. And so what's happened is over 50 years, we've collected the bones from more than 4,000 moose, and that gave us a very large sample size. Some of them have arthritis, some of them don't. Some of them have big metatarsal bones, some of them have short metatarsal bones. Anyways, we did all the analysis on all that bone data, and what we found is, sure enough, the moose with the shorter bones, those are the ones that were malnourished, the odds of them getting arthritis were almost twice as great as moose with very big bones.
Interesting.
And so that's what we found out.
Does the arthritis always occur in the hips?
Not always. It's the most common place.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, but they get arthritis with some regularity also in the sacrum, the very mm-hmm. Last, you know, the kind of lower part of your back.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes in the vertebrae, a little bit further up, kind of midway up the vertebrae. And then very rarely, we've only seen it like once or twice in the shoulder.
So, and again, I want to remind our listeners, we're visiting with John Vucetich, who is with the with Michigan Technological University. So, now you've got a pretty good idea, pretty good proof, I would say, that malnutrition or malnourishment in a young moose results in very frequently results in arthritis, and again because of the length of that metatarsal bone you were talking about, and so a speculation that perhaps the same situation occurs with humans. From this kind of postulation, where do you go next? What happens next?
Yeah, I think two things can happen next. One is in the human world, folks who are studying arthritis in humans, I think this gives them occasion to kind of reinspect this hypothesis that had once been kind of treated as just mere speculation. The people who have existing data sets will have to look at those data sets to see if they can learn anything about instances where humans are undernourished and see if it plays out in humans. For us, I think what it is we also have only part of the picture. The part of the picture we have is this malnourishment part. I think our next step is that we have this large warehouse full of moose bones, 4,000 different moose represented there, and all those bones have DNA in them. And our next step is to see if we can get a more complete picture for moose and arthritis by basically looking at to see what the relationship is between genetics and malnutrition and arthritis. That'll keep us occupied for a little while. There's a lot of bones.
I would say 4,000 moose bones are going to keep you busy for
I think so.
A little while, John.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
You may want to pull some of those people off the tick counting groups. I'm going to work on the moose bones.
We may have to reallocate some of the human resources there, yeah.
There you go. Well, I find the whole thing, well, first of all, I've always loved to read about the moose studies on Isle Royale. We're so close here to Isle Royale, and
yes.
It's a wonderful resource. And, of course, moose are just such a special animal for so many people, I think, just hold a wonderful fascination. So that's always been interesting. And now this whole thing is, I think, fascinating too. Do you have anywhere, a website or anywhere that people can go and learn more about this, read more about it?
Yes, definitely. We have a website, isleroyalwolf.org. Wolf is singular. It's all one word, isleroyalwolf.org. And there you can find all kinds of stuff about Isle Royale, the wolves and moose that live there, some about the arthritis, all kinds of stories and pictures, all kinds of stuff at that webpage.
That's fascinating. Do you do much of your flights or much of your study during the wintertime, John?
Yeah, we have a 2-month field season every winter from January to February.
And so you're camping over there on the Isle?
Well, we're stationed at Windigo, which is the west end of Isle Royale, and so there's kind of the basic idea is there's a cabin, and in that cabin there's a wood heat, natural gas for like the stove, for no running water, so it's just an outhouse, and we knock a hole in the frozen lake for ice, knock a hole in the ice for the water. Mm-hmm. We take a sauna to clean up. And, those are the essentials of living on Isle Royale in the wintertime.
And lots of moose bones.
Lots of moose bones, you bet.
Well, John, I want to thank you very much for taking time. Oh, I'm sorry. My co-host Buck Benson has a question for you.
Perfect.
Yeah, I was curious. It leads to a slightly different topic, but you're describing a moose or a wolf population that might get down to 20 animals or less. And I think this cycle has happened before out there. You can refresh my memory on that. But what does that do to the genetic strain with a small pool, smaller and smaller pool? And have you noticed things about those wolves that you don't see in wolves elsewhere?
Yeah, indeed. So the wolves on Isle Royale, they've been there for about 50 years, and so far as we had thought for quite some time, they've been completely isolated. And the other thing is that for all these years, despite being isolated, it seems as though they hadn't shown any signs of inbreeding. And so Isle Royale had been kind of an important example of, oh, look, some populations can remain small and really not show signs of inbreeding. Depression. Well, anyways, what we discovered about a year ago is that we probably had that all wrong, and here's how. We have a thing for bones, and so we even collect a lot of wolf bones as well. We don't have quite as many of those, but anyways, what we discovered is one or two of the bones seem to have some deformities in the vertebrae, and they seem to be birth defects. And so we showed them to an expert, actually from Sweden. She's an expert in the anatomy of wolves. And she said, if you have these deformities, I bet you have other important deformities that you just didn't recognize. We invited her over to the United States here, and she looked at our entire collection. And sure enough, what we found is that overall, one-third of the Isle Royale wolves, 33%, had a particular kind of bone deformity. I'll tell you about the deformity in just a minute. But normal wolf populations that are not inbred, only 1 in 100 wolves has this kind of deformity. So really high incidence, and that had surprised us, but it kind of had always been there. And then the deformity itself is one that's a little difficult to characterize. It's known a little bit how it behaves in dogs, but with dogs, sometimes it causes no trouble at all, and other times it causes kind of severe troubles. It can cause nerve damage and difficulty in wolves walking. And so I think for Isle Royale, we're kind of stuck for understanding all that's going on. The main reason is that we have these deformities, and we know that sometimes, at least in domestic dogs, it kind of causes serious troubles. But then when we look at wolves on Isle Royale, in like their vital rates, like the birth rates and the death rates and population abundance, those all seem to be kind of normal. And so it's kind of difficult to put the whole picture together, but it's not so simple as we used to think it was, which was just simply, oh, they're fine, they don't have any troubles at all.
Well, I know it had been suggested that Bob and I suffer from maybe a small gene pool problem. I'm just curious. We got to get that over to humans, too.
Matter of fact, I think that we can pretty well attest to that.
Yeah.
But it's coming from somewhere anyway. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for taking time on a Friday evening to stop in here at the Roadhouse and visit with us. It's a fascinating subject. And we'll continue to follow it closely and appreciate all your work.
Okay, well, we pick up your radio waves over there on Isle Royale, so we listen to you fairly often throughout the summer, so we're glad to have been able to share the time with you tonight.
Wonderful. Have a great weekend.